everybody. This is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast, where we are figuring out how to invest. That's what we do.
Yes. Yes, we are. I like that.
If you're just joining us right now, you're going to be quite surprised because we're not talking about, diversification and, and more diversification.
We had that debate, trust me, and we've moved on.
We moved on 6 years ago from that. Yeah. So catch up. We're deep into Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger style investing, and that's what we do. And here we go.
That's what we do. Yeah. I mean, last time we talked a bunch about, we had a kind of a crazy conversation, I feel like, about Bernie Madoff and the experience and the like pressures and incentives, maybe perverse incentives and integrity that is required of somebody trying to be a true, well, a speculator or an investor, but I'll say definitely a true investor over a long period of time. And as we ended, I kept thinking about that moment that the market was dropping back in March last year after the pandemic really started going around the world finally, and people started really taking it seriously, and lockdown started happening, shutdown of business started happening, and the market reacted. And it was a really intense time because it was the first time that I've been through a drop as an investor. I mean, I've been through it as a human and just sort of like I vaguely remember sitting there in like, 99, 2000 when the dot-com one happened and just being like, I have no idea what's happening around me. And in the 2007, 2008 one, I was in law school. And I remember like that was a huge thing because I was in New York. It was literally happening like downtown from me. And I had no idea what was happening. And this time I knew what was happening. And that was a completely amazing experience for me. It was really, I hesitate to say this because there are a lot of people who had a really hard time, but I felt really joyful as that was happening because I think partially because I knew what was happening. Like I wasn't confused. I wasn't scared. I had some sense of the reasons of the cause and effect, the reasons that people were selling their shares of stock. And it made sense. And so I was kind of watching it like, okay, yeah, like this is actually like, I think a reasonable response to what's happening in the world right now. Like this makes sense to me.
As opposed to say Madoff's response, which was, not obviously the one in 2007, 2008 is what busted him. People started pulling their money out, said, give me my money, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
That there were not a full market meltdown. I want my money back. And he didn't have enough in his Ponzi scheme to cover all of the requests.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he fessed up. And what got him into the problem, who knows for sure? I mean, some people argue that he had been in it all along. But typically what happens is a fund manager that gets in trouble like this and starts a pyramid scheme will get there because the market drops and he has a great amount of fear of loss of prestige, loss of position, loss of all of these things, not just money, but also loss of money. And I really want to talk with you guys about that to prepare yourself, because what Danielle's experiencing is very unusual. I mean, when the market
drops. And that's why I wanted to bring it out. I wanted to make sure that we talked about that a little because it is very unusual.
It's weird. It would be like, everybody's sick, but I'm so happy.
Yeah.
It's really awkward.
It was awkward because I was texting people like who I know who are in the investment world going like, this is so exciting, guys. Like, aren't you excited? And I was getting these texts back like, no, stop saying like very awkward.
If it hadn't turned around and you had kept up that exuberance, I promise you, if it was 2007 and this thing was going to go down 50, 60%, the messages would start being longer than just no. It would be some hate on you, I'm thinking.
Not from people who know
maybe
me.
Not your friends.
I'm not like talking about like, strangers. These are like personal people in my life. No, but it was definitely like it occurred to me at that moment that not everyone was having the same experience as me. And one person I know said like, well, yeah, like you have cash to buy things. So like, of course you're feeling good. And I was like, oh yeah, that's totally right. Like if I were 100% invested right now and just watching everything go down, how would I have felt? I actually truly think I wouldn't have really felt that bad because by definition, I should be confident in what I owned and hopefully be able, if I were a fund manager, be able to raise more money and buy more of what I owned. But that is hard to do when the market is dropping. So I think there's, you know, I get it, like I understand, but at the same time, I think that if you're going to be managing your own money, your family's money, your mom's, your dad's, your husband's, your friends, whoever, or professionally, as you pointed out last time, market drops happen. They just do. Or maybe we're in some kind of crazy new universe where it's never going to happen again, as you also pointed out, because the government will keep it from happening.
It's going to happen again.
Let's assume it's going to happen again. So
I think what causes you to...
I think having that, being ready, having that experience of being ready and not having a complete emotional breakdown is really, really, it's everything. So actually, I'm curious, what was your experience during that time? I don't remember any, we didn't even really talk about it that much. I don't remember you having any like particular emotions about it, except like it's finally happening, basically.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I think so first off, you guys, you're all going to go through emotions. There's going to be emotions. And it's really wonderful when you figure out how to be this type of investor, this sort of Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, what we call a rule one type investor or ruler, is that you've figured out how to structure your portfolio and your head in a way that benefits from chaos. You have in effect become not fragile. You've become anti-fragile in Nicholas Taleb's words.
Each affects the other. The head and the portfolio.
They do. The head and the portfolio are affected by each other. In other words, you've become an investor who benefits for pretty much whatever's going on in the market. This is what anti-fragile means. It's like if the tide goes out, you really benefit. If the tide comes in, you really benefit. You don't have a market that you don't benefit from. And this is really interesting. This is something Ben Graham invented and Warren Buffett has perfected, Charlie Munger, and passed it down to us. And you can read about it in 60 letters on Berkshire Hathaway, what the process is. You can read about it in the book Invested. You can read about it in Guy Spier's book, Confession. What is it?
I got to say, I'm about to start going through them on my newsletter, The Invested Practice. So if you want to join me, join The Invested Practice. Which book? What are you talking about? I'm thinking about my awesome newsletter.
Guy Spier.
Oh,
you're not even listening to me.
Educate. I know. I'm thinking about my future project that I'm really excited about that I worked all day on.
Education of a Value Investor. Right? You can read about it in Monash Pabrai's book, The Dondo Investor. And so there's so many resources out there that you can read, but it's difficult to get it, honestly, in a deep level until you actually get hands-on and then start to work with real money, actually.
Yeah, okay.
And so
what
my
was
experience
your experience?
Was this. My experience was this. As soon as it started to tumble, we raised more capital immediately. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of money come in. It was great. We lost no investors as it started to tumble. So we were really excited about that as well, because people have been trained by us as to...
What was your internal experience?
Our internal experience was twofold. Number one, we had several companies drop into the margin of safety area for us and we bought them.
That's external.
Yeah, but that was fun.
What did you feel personally?
Well, I'm trying to explain.
Okay.
The first thing we thought was, okay, we can buy companies. Let's do it. All right. The second thing is, and I'm talking about during that, there's about a one week period in there or so. Mm-hmm. So we had some cash. We had about 30% cash that we could spend. All right. So we got companies, it's coming down. So we're excited we can buy some companies. So there's excitement. That's the first thing.
Inside
Phil
Town.
Excitement inside Phil Town. He's looking at me like I'm not even in the
Well, because you keep saying subject. We. You personally okay, is all what right. I'm interested in.
And my team. We're all about the same place. Okay, so that was the first thing. Second thing was the market stopped going down and popped back up. And we had tranched into several of these businesses. So we didn't get enough. That was frustrating. And we didn't pull the trigger because I was sure it was heading on down.
Me too.
All right. So it started back up and I didn't do anything. I should have listened to my own advice and piled it in there. But
that's not your advice, though. Your advice is to tranche, no?
Tranche. But if it starts to come back out of the margin of safety, get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But that's easy to say and harder to do when you think the market's melting down completely.
Right, totally.
Pretty much a reasonable thought at the time. All right. Second thing was we've got 70% of our positions going down. Okay? So, for example, Boeing was one. And we had bought in aggressively. We had short puts. So now we're being probably put the stock. We are, and which is filling up our plate pretty much. And the stock's going down like a brick, and it goes down to 100, and we bought more, but we were so loaded, and we have rules around us that we can't do everything we want to do exactly. So we were just stuck. We wanted to buy a ton of it at that price, and we just couldn't do it because we would have to sell other stuff at a loss because everything's going down, right? All right, so that was frustrating. Then the stuff that was going down, my feelings around that was, thank God we bought all this stuff on sale. And it hadn't gotten very far away from being on sale and was going down.
That's a great, great point. Yeah.
And we were just like, yeah, my God, how far is this going to go? And how much can we load up? And the one big mistake that I made was I didn't load up everything. The market was down 37%. At the bottom. And I just thought, you know, my other experiences of a real major meltdown, which I thought this was in 1999 and 2007 and 8. And in both times, you know, sitting tight was the right thing to do. And we waited and waited and waited and got in.
Yeah.
Really low. So I was thinking 50% down and it just didn't happen. They were so quick to solve it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And fix it.
I distinctly remember there was one day and I was watching the prices of companies I really wanted. And there was one day where it was just about at a price I was comfortable with a margin of safety, but not all the way there. Like it was just on the edge, you know?
Yeah.
For one day. And I literally had your voice in my head and it was like, it's going to take 6 months to a year to melt down. There's no rush. And I was like, cool, I will sleep on this and I'll see what happens tomorrow. And the next day was that pop up. There was one day where it was right where it was supposed to be and or not even quite where it was, where I was comfortable with it. And because it wasn't all the way there, I didn't buy those particular companies. I bought other ones, which were less exciting to other people. Well, so they stayed down a little longer. But
well, just sort of to tell you kind of how things went, I mean, roughly speaking, okay, without getting into too much detail here, the Dow was down 37%. In general, we were down about 17%. So that was the first kind of amazing thing that happened from the portfolio is the market was down twice as deep as the stocks that we owned. And that's because we bought them on sale. There wasn't very far for them to go, right? Plus we had a cash cushion that wasn't going down at all. All right. So those two things were great.
Because let's talk about that a little more, because if you don't buy it on sale, what that means is you bought it at what would we call that? Full price? High price?
Yeah, full price. Yeah, very high price, usually.
Expecting that it will continue to go up as the company makes money. The price will basically grow, but always kind of at a commensurately high price.
Right.
Which is, I think, you know, a lot of people are thinking these days, and I get it. But when the market then has a drop like that, and all of a sudden prices are more on the average level and may continue to be commensurately average going forward. You got to wait that out a decent amount of time probably to get back to just to where you were.
And this is the tough part about advice to diversify and just hold is it's very hard for most people to hold on to something that's dropping, let's say down 50% in a typical market drop, and feel fine about it because they don't know what the thing was worth in the first place. So if you bought Boeing, let's say at $460 a share, on the advice of your financial advisor, who's saying that, you know, he's an efficient market theory person who thinks that all prices and values are correct, that price is value. So you bought it at 460, full of confidence that price is value, everything is good. And then Boeing started going through all of these problems, right? The Boeing 737 MAX, mm-hmm. and just about the time it starts to look like maybe that's going to recover and the stock starts to come up a bit, then it gets hit by COVID and the airline shut down. And you're sitting there wondering, have I made some terrible mistake with my portfolio? And this is why people don't buy a lot of a stock, because they don't have confidence in their ability to decide, yeah, this is super cheap.
Yeah.
Right? Whole different ballpark. So now you bought it at 460 and the stock is at 100. How are you feeling about that? You're feeling probably scared. Like, why wouldn't this go bankrupt next?
Totally.
Right? And now Boeing's taking on $50 million of debt. I mean, you don't know what's going on. You have no sense of it. And so it's got to be really scary.
I mean, like, just because somebody bought it $450 doesn't mean that was the wrong price to buy it at. Maybe that's a great price. So,
well, okay.
I don't follow Boeing at all. I have no clue. So if the point is, it has to be a price that the buyer understands and knows why that's a reasonable price and why the price should grow over the next 10 years.
But even if you do understand it, you have to have a margin of safety. This is the three most important words of investing.
Good point.
Is, okay, great, you understand it, but oh, great, you're also human.
Yeah.
Also, there are things that happen that you don't possibly imagine.
Exactly. Crazy things happen.
Right? And so that margin of safety is what protects it. So for example, just again, to make the point, when the stock is at 460, we weren't even thinking of owning it. We look at it and it's way, way up there in terms of its price versus intrinsic value. We feel it's fully valued. And not crazy value, but fully valued. And then this 737 MAX problems start to happen and the stock price drops down toward 200. Okay, so it gets almost cut in half. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started moving on it by selling, basically selling other people insurance that we'll buy their stock from them at a price we want to pay. So the stock price hadn't gone down as far as we were ready to buy it, but it went down far enough that we could say, and go into the market and offer insurance. Let's say we're willing to buy it at $200 a share and the stock's at 250, 260. We can offer insurance to people and say, we would be happy to buy this from you. This many shares for this long of a period of time at $200 a share. You'll pay us an insurance policy. And people were so scared for 1 year of insurance to have the surety that they could sell that stock at $200 a share. They were paying us $60 ballpark. I might be off a little bit, but I'm pretty close. About $60. In other words, by doing that, if my risk is $200, I'm making $60. That's 30% in a year. All right, well, that's something I'm interested in doing. I will do that all day. And I don't know if we did it exactly 200. I think it was at 220. Anyway, you get the general idea, right, Danielle?
Yeah.
Is that you're selling, I'd sold people the right to force me to buy their stock at 200 when I'm sitting there hoping I get a chance to buy it at 200.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stock goes through 200 like, you know, just hot knife through butter all the way down to 100 when COVID hits.
Mm.
And now we can sell insurance at 60 or at 100 or whatever. We can be assured that we can buy positions in this company and get a huge return at the same time. Anyway, I don't want to get all into that, but there are really great things to do as a company starts to go on sale. And the most important great thing to do is to buy it. Buy it aggressively when it goes on sale. And in order to do that with confidence, you have to know the value of the business.
Oh, yeah. But you also have to have money, which was kind of the problem for a lot of people.
Okay, look, put it like this. I agree. You have to have money. Now, let's say the house across the street sells for typically $460,000. Let's say it's a townhome and they sell for $460,000 per townhome. Okay?
Okay.
And all of a sudden, there's this massive meltdown in real estate. Mm-hmm. This actually happened to my mother-in-law. So I know. So $460,000 to $500,000 for a townhome. All these things are identical. And a year later, they sell for $200,000 in foreclosure.
Okay.
Would you find the money? Would you be motivated somehow to get your hands on one of those things if you knew that was happening and you knew the value, you knew that they rented for a 10 cap at $460,000. That was the 10 cap price.
Mm-hmm. All right? Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
In other words, the yield on a $200,000 purchase would be about 20% a year. Would you do everything you could if you understood what I just said? Would you do everything you could to buy that townhome?
I don't know. Probably not.
Oh, jeez.
Oh. Because I'm not going to do everything serious? I can to come up with some kind of janky deal. No.
Janky deal.
Yeah, I don't know. Would you do everything you could? It's so dramatic. I don't know. Maybe do sometimes. Like three things.
Three things. Well... I'll tell you what, if you didn't do everything you could do later on, like as in a year later or 2 years later or today, 10 years later, when those things are selling now for $1 million, you'd be very upset with yourself.
That I'm like a human in this world who lived through the financial crisis and all of real estate dropping like that. So yes, I have been there. I have been through this. I did not do anything that I could. So I'm fully aware. I mean, this is not like an imaginary situation.
When did you start learning about investing?
Every single person has been in that situation.
Come on, when did you start learning about investing?
What year? 6 of 2015.
There you go. So you did not understand yet that you want to be able to be ready to buy things when they go on sale. So you didn't understand that yet.
So of course, my excuse.
Of course you didn't do anything.
Perfect.
But now you understand, and you're acting like you don't. What is it about this that you don't understand? I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, if that happened again, that would be one of the great investment moments.
Because
you know people have to rent things.
Yeah. I don't know what I would do, Dad.
And there's money out there to loan to you. You don't have to have $200,000. You can borrow some money.
Maybe it would totally work out. I would probably do like three things.
Okay.
This is who I am.
And that's where we're different.
Yeah, that's where we're different.
I am ready. I'm willing to pounce on the things I understand.
And how much did you pounce on at that time?
Gosh, okay. Let's see. We loaded up the truck and I went on TV and said, we're buying everything we can.
That's not doing everything you can when you have no money to like buy a townhouse.
I had money.
You had money. That's my point. But you bought it on your computer. Like, that's a great situation.
No, I also bought a farm that we live on. This is when we bought the farm.
Good.
We bought the farm. That sounds terrible.
So, I think the takeaway is being ready is a good idea. Right?
Being ready is a good idea. Finding the money is a good idea.
But you have not yet answered fully how your experience was going through the drop. Like, were you sleeping? Was it comfortable? Were you agitated?
It was completely comfortable.
Did you feel excited like I did?
I felt very excited till the market just kept going back up and up and up and up and up and up. And we realized that we'd just gotten priced out.
Mixture of excitement and slow realization.
And a little frustration. And then kind of a bit sad that, you know, we didn't, I guess, upset with ourselves that we didn't really, upset with myself that I didn't really pull the trigger harder on a couple more companies.
You know who else didn't pull the trigger hard was Mr. Buffett himself, who I think What?
I took a lot of solace in that. Yeah. Warren thought it was going farther too.
I think he really did. And I think he talked about it in last year's shareholder meeting. He didn't say exactly that, of course, because he would never, but he said something like, it was amazing how the government stepped in, or something like, I was waiting for the deals to come to, like, basically like the desperate people to come to me, and they didn't, because because they didn't have to, because they were able to get good loans without coming to somebody like Buffett. So
God, I'm starting to realize we're starting to sound like a bunch of bottom feeders here.
How are we sounding like bottom feeders?
I'm waiting for the people to be suffering enough to where they come to me. This is like some kind of horrible guy.
That's true. Oh,
the people didn't come to me.
Oh, they weren't desperate enough for my terrible, onerous, usurious deals that I would give them.
Yes, exactly. But here's the other side of that, that I'm sure is the only side Warren sees, is that his company is such a financial powerhouse that he's there to come to the rescue. He's there to ride to the rescue. He sees himself, I'm sure, as a white knight. I certainly would.
Not force people into usurious, terrible, onerous deals at all. He gives people like pretty good terms.
Yeah, and he's willing to step in and help the company survive. And that's his incredible legacy. And so I'm sure when he was talking about it, it wasn't from the point of view,
No.
It was from the point of view, we're standing by to help, and we didn't have to.
If I made it sound like that, I fully did not mean to, and I fully take it back, and I would never, ever, ever say something like that or mean anything like that.
He's a fantastic person.
But we get to hear about him really soon.
Yeah.
Hear about him. We get to hear from him.
It's coming up.
Next weekend, or this weekend. This weekend coming up is the Berkshire Hathaway meeting. And
that's right.
You can watch it online with everybody else. What's happening? There's no in-person meeting.
Right. Tell us what and when and how.
Well, if I had memorized it, I would be happy to tell you. It's on Saturday, May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
It is in your time zone at a reasonable time, I hope. And it is on the internet.
Okay. So here's what you do.
Were you able to Google it while I said that?
I am.
Perfect.
I'm Googling it. Okay. So Google Berkshire meeting, because it's not Buffett. You probably Google Buffett too, and it'll come up. Broadcast kicks off at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and concludes at 5:30 Eastern Standard Time. Buffett's saying to every one of you, direct your really tough questions to Charlie. You can write questions in.
They're so cute.
And I'm honestly not positive that's exactly for this meeting, but let me just double check. The 2021 meeting. I'm on the Berkshire Hathaway website right now.
I think that's right. It's all on May 1st. It's always the first Saturday in May.
And don't miss the 1 o'clock, because at 1 o'clock, you get to watch a movie on the pre-meeting show that actually Buffett takes quite an interest in creating. It's usually very funny. And then from that's till 1:30. And then from 1:30 to 5 is a Q&A. So be there. Charlie will be piped in. I think they're going to go to, actually Buffett is going to go out to Charlie's place.
Yeah, he's going to California.
Yep. And they're going to do it. They're going to do that from there. So don't miss that. It's just a really, really kind of family tribal get together, and the questions are usually really quite good, and they should be very interesting this year since Buffett's still sitting on $150 billion. So there's going to be some questions about how can you still sit on this ever since like 2017.
Yeah,
you've been camped out.
And I hope there are questions about the tech purchases that Berkshire's been making and why they think those are at good prices. I'm very interested in that.
Yes, very, very. So I think we'll be back after the meeting talking about this next week. And so that should be quite entertaining.
I'm excited. Very good.
All right.
Well, the seminal event of the value investing calendar.
Indeed it is.
All right. Until then, thanks everybody.
Bye guys. Time to go play. See ya.
Bye.
Hi guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com. And sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.